Welcome. Please accept Jim and John's invitation to join them as they once again ask each other, what do you think about... Hey, John. In keeping with our previous topic of horror movies that were based on actual events, what do you think about the movies Psycho, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Silence of the Lambs?
Oh, I got to tell you, I've never seen The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but I saw those other two, and I really liked them. They bothered me, right? They got scarier as I had more time to think about the movie, right? And what actually happened in the movie. And then you kind of dwell on the fact that those people are like real. They really exist. And there really are crazy people out there who think things like, it rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
Yeah. I have to say, I love them. But I must confess, I have never seen the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in its entirety in one sitting. We were like, what, 10 when it came out? So
yeah,
I wasn't old enough to see it in a theater, and my parents sure as heck wouldn't have taken me to it. So, but over the years, I've seen it in bits and pieces, you know, during October on TV, some channel somewhere.
Yeah, you can pretty much catch any classic horror movie somewhere some nowadays.
Right. But when it comes to the other two, Psycho and Silence of the Lambs, I can't even tell you how many times I've seen them.
Got to tell you, Silence of the Lambs, that was one of the ones where I first thought, holy shit, there are people like this. You know? That's what bothered me about that movie. It wasn't the movie. You know, the movie was good and it was scary and all that kind of stuff. Yay, it accomplished what it was supposed to do. But it was later when I'm laying in bed at 2 a.m. thinking, holy cow, that could be a real dude.
Well, with that thought in mind, and thinking of all the horror and terror and suspense that are contained within those movies, the scariest thing about them is that they're each, of course, there's some poetic license thrown in, but each one is based on actual events perpetrated by a Wisconsin man in the 1940s and 1950s. A local yokel named Ed Gein.
Yeah, a real dude inspired these things.
And, you know, his story might partly explain my dislike of most horror movies where the killer turns out to be a person and not a monster. With the exception of these three that I like, most I just don't care for. I mean, if I want to hear about a person who's a killer, I'll just watch the news or read the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I dig the vampires and werewolves and the zombies and otherworldly beings, but as far as I'm concerned, it just gets too real when the monster's a human.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, there's nothing scarier than the human monster. The depths of our cruelty and depravity, you know, remain unplumbed.
Yeah, I mean, honest to God, truly the only thing I fear is other people, right? I mean, people do the most horrible things I can think of for the smallest of reasons. I mean, who actually thinks of strapping a man to a table, cutting his belly open, removing his genitals and his intestines, burning them before his very eyes, and then tie his arms and legs to horses that spur away so the limbs will tear off? And then you cut his head off. All while a crowd jeers and throws wastes at the guy. What kind of sick-ass person thinks of this? How do you say this to another person who then goes, "Yo, that's a great idea. Let's do it." Right? That's what being drawn and quartered was. The last person to be drawn and quartered was in July of 1781. So this continued to be done to people not all that long ago. You know, we think it's in the 14th, 15th, 16th century. They were doing it in the 18th century. The last two people to be sentenced to be drawn and quartered was in 1867, but the sentence wasn't carried out, and it was abolished as a legal form of punishment soon after. But prior to 1867, they evidently thought it was an okie-dokie idea, right? Who thinks of that? Jesus Christ. Or strapping somebody into an electric chair and saying, I know, let's set this dude on fire with electricity. That's just fucking mean. I mean, you know, we don't do that with hot dogs.
Well, Johnny boy, you grab a shovel, and I'll grab a mattock, and we'll dig up the history of Ed Gein.
Yes, let's do.
Ed Gein was born August 27th, 1906, to George and Augusta Gein. He was the couple's second son. Henry was their first. George Gein was an alcoholic who had difficulty holding a job.
Okay.
And he died of heart failure in April 1940.
So then Ed was 34?
34, yeah. He was a grown man.
When he died. Okay.
Yeah, yep. He and his brother lived at home their entire lives, neither married. Now, Augusta Gein was a religious zealot and a very controlling woman who hated her drunken spouse. So she probably didn't shed many tears when he died. And she would not allow her sons to venture off of the family farm except to attend the local school when they were children.
So that's why they never married. And they're living at home.
Henry Gein died in May 1944 when he and his brother Ed were trying to do a controlled burn on the farm to clear out some overgrown land.
Sure.
Henry somehow became lost, evidently, in the smoke when they accidentally let the controlled burn become an uncontrolled burn.
Mm.
Later, a search party found his corpse, and it was determined that he didn't die by incineration, but rather by asphyxiation.
Yeah, that's common, though, with fire.
Right, the smoke gets you. Yep.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a blessing, because you're knocked out when the fire actually...
Yeah.
Now, there were hints that the body of Henry was bruised and battered, and people were speculating that Ed might have murdered his brother. But the authorities never found any evidence of foul play in his death. It was just bad luck.
Okay, well, let's assume for a second that it really was just bad luck and Ed didn't kill his brother.
Then the next year, Augusta Gein suffered a stroke, which left her paralyzed and forced Ed to assume care for her.
Okay, so that means that that was 1945 when she had the stroke.
Right, and then she did die later that year in December.
Because Ed was taking such good care of her, obviously.
Now, none of that sounds like fodder for a horror movie, does it?
Certainly does not. Sounds like a guy that was probably not having the greatest life, but, you know, no evidence of weirdness.
Yeah, well, just hold on a second, because the gruesomeness is about to begin.
Okay.
On Sunday, November 17th, 1957, two Wisconsin papers, the Journal Times out of Racine and the La Crosse Tribune out of where else? La Crosse, ran versions of the following news item. Widow, 58, found slain. Plainfield, Wisconsin, AP. A 58-year-old widow, missing from her store since early in the day, was found slain Saturday night in a field on a nearby farm. A man was taken into custody for questioning. Mrs. Bernice Warden's son, Frank, told authorities that he entered the store about 5 p.m. and found the cash register was open, bloodstains on the floor, and his mother missing.
Oh, this'll freak you out.
Mrs. Warden's body was found on the Ed Gein farm, 7 miles southwest of Plainfield. A Washara County Sheriff's deputy found the body.
Now, why was he looking there? That's the part I never understood, right? Like, what's the probable cause to be walking around on Mr. Gein's property?
Sheriff Art Schley refused to say how Mrs. Warden died or the nature of her wounds. Schley said the state laboratory had been called in. The man taken into custody by the sheriff was not identified.
It was the Ed Gein farm, and everybody else is dead, right? So who did he take into custody?
Oh, that was certainly saddening for the Warden family. But this short little article is really rather vague and run-of-the-mill.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like anything other than just an abduction, and they killed her.
Yeah, a dead body was found, and a guy was taken in just to be questioned. So no one, excepting maybe the investigating officials, could have guessed at the shitstorm that would hit the newspapers the very next day as a result of the investigation that discovered the body of the unfortunate woman. According to the Oshkosh Northwestern, on page 1 of its November 18th edition, a fellow named Ed Gein admitted to the abduction of Bernice Worden.
Okay, so he says, yep, I took her.
He said he grabbed her, dragged her out of the store, bundled her up into her own truck, and then drove off in her truck.
So he didn't take the money out of the register. At least he's not admitting to that. But the register is open.
Hey, you're going to find out that this guy has enough criminal activity going on. So let's not add robbery to his burden, too. And once he got to the edge of the village of Plainfield, he stopped the truck, got out, and walked back to the store to get his own vehicle, which he then drove back to the truck, transferred the body into his car, drove home, and he hung the body in a shed by its heels and proceeded to dismember the corpse.
Now, wait a minute now. He admits to taking her, but somehow between here, he drives away in the truck. Is she alive? We don't know.
I'm thinking she's at least unconscious.
So then he gets his vehicle, puts the body in. She's dead at this point.
Right. And the son did say he found bloodstains on the floor. So there was some sort of
physical altercation.
Yeah. Within the store. A quote from the article states that Gein insisted, possibly in an attempt to somehow save himself after his admission, that he was hazy about many things. Gein himself said, "The only thing I'm not sure of is that I killed her because I didn't have a weapon with me or on my property."
Well, you don't have to have a weapon to kill people.
Right, and you're in a hardware store. There's plenty of stuff to grab.
Yeah, and he says, "Oh, yeah, I took her. Oh, yeah, I switched vehicles. Oh, yeah, I hung the body up. Oh, yeah, I dismembered it. I don't know that I killed her."
Yeah, I'm just not sure I killed her. And now some of the true weirdness begins to slip out in these quotes that are taken from the newspaper.
Yeah, I know. This gets really fucking creepy.
District Attorney Earl Kylene said he is satisfied that other skulls found on Gein's farm were taken from cemeteries, as Gein insisted that is what he did.
The better part from that is that they just mentioned that in passing. You know, it's like, oh, there's some other skulls. Yeah, whatever. It's unrelated to the Bernice Worden case, so what do we care?
And then the article said, the number of skulls found on the farm has been placed at 10. Kylene said, however, that he doubted very much whether any other murders could be solved with the evidence found on the Gein farm. That's some weird shit just to be casually slipped into a story.
Yeah. 10 skulls, right? And better than that is Gein's insisting that, you know, he took them from a cemetery. You know, the implication here is that he's a grave robber, right? He's robbing corpses and taking their skulls.
Oh, that Gein.
And they're all like, oh, that's fine. Who doesn't do that kind of thing?
In addition to the sensational mention of the skulls, other more mundane information is found in this article concerning Gein himself and his arrest. Gein was described as a slightly built man. He lived alone on the family farm since his mother's death some years previously. He did not work as a farmer. Instead, he made a living as a jack of all trades, you know, doing odd jobs around the town, such as mowing and snow plowing.
Yeah, you got to be careful who you let do odd work around your house.
Yeah. They arrested him on Saturday night in the local grocery. And, you know, evidently he didn't put up a fight or anything. other newspapers took a less subtle tack in divulging the weirdness merely hinted at in this piece.
Well, you know, I honestly thought that, you know, if I was a newspaper editor and the reporter comes in with this story, there's a headline. Bam! 10 skulls found on Dean residence, right? I mean, wouldn't you have that in big print?
You would think.
I mean, because you're trying to sell a newspaper. Papers,
yes.
Yeah.
The Twin City News Record ran this page one headline. Arrest farmer for killing 11. Believe victims were eaten. Butchered body of woman is found in shack.
What? Wait. Where did we get to cannibalism?
Leap of faith, buddy.
Oh, okay. Because I didn't see any evidence of that.
Let's see if these quotes taken from this particular article maybe give us that information. Police said that the man, Ed Gein, had confessed killing Mrs. Bernice Warden, 58, and then raised his hands like claws and snarled, "I've been killing for 7 years." Washara County District Attorney Earl Kylene said, "It appears to be cannibalism."
Well, they were selective reporting in that other story then, weren't they?
Yeah. Portage County Sheriff Herbert Wonsersky said Gein told a conflicting story and at one time said he robbed graves to get the skulls and bones in the house.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, sure.
Authorities said they found in the house belts which appeared to have been made of human skin.
Now, when you say belts, do you mean like belts that hold up your pants?
The pants belts, yep.
Is human skin a good leather for making a belt?
I bet it's as good as a cow once you get it, you know, tanned.
I don't know. I don't think our skin's all that tough.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
And a human heart was in a pot on the kitchen stove.
Yeah, now that's nasty.
So there you got your cannibalism, at least circumstantial.
And it would have to be the old lady's heart because the other ones were skulls. Bones.
Right.
Well, you got to get it fresh, I guess.
Yeah. Among other articles found in the farmhouse were a child's clothing and a number of newspaper clippings telling of unsolved slayings of a number of Wisconsin women.
Okay. Now, finding a child's clothing is not that unusual. You come to my house, you'll find a child's clothing.
Yeah, but you've been married and your children...
And grandchildren and stuff.
Yeah. So this guy didn't have a wife or children or grandchildren.
Okay. All right. And you know, unsolved slayings. Clip that boy out, right?
Yeah, he's into death at least. An additional chilling note in relation to the child's clothing, as one of the odd jobs.
Oh, don't say it. Don't say it.
Gein would offer babysitting services to the townsfolk.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is every parent's nightmare.
Yeah, and it's going to get better. Or worse, depending on your point of view.
I'm sure it does.
The Stevens Point Daily Journal smeared almost the whole of page one on its November 18th edition with tales from the horrific crime scene that was the Gein Farm. The item entitled Police Probe Grizzly Scene made the following claim. Portions of the bodies of possibly 10 persons have been found in the house of a 50-year-old town of Plainfield farmer. Officers who had been at the scene said these items were among the inventory found in Gein's home.
I kind of cringe at the use of the word inventory.
Strap in for this one, buddy. The decapitated body of Mrs. Warden, disemboweled and, quote, cleaned like you'd clean a deer. Parts of skulls of 10 or more persons. The skull caps neatly sawn off. One small skull was believed to be that of a child of about 6. Another was thought to be that of a woman of approximately 60 years of age. A quote from the article reads, "Portions of the skulls were found scattered about the kitchen as though they may have been used as dishes." And think bowls more than dishes. Imagine enjoying your fruity pebbles in that bad boy. They found leather made of human skin, which was used to upholster furniture, make lampshades, belts, and knife scabbards. Extra rolls that hadn't been used yet were found in a drawer.
It puts the lotion on its skin, or else it gets the hose again.
Again, there was a mention of the children's clothing. They found the tanned skin from an entire human head with the long hair still rooted in the scalp. They found two complete sets of dentures, a tom-tom made of a can covered with human skin. I'm not sure exactly of the pronunciation, but putties, P-U-T-T-E-E-S,
yeah.
Made from women's legs. Those are those, like, if you picture a World War I soldier, those leather straps they wrapped up with their shin, you know?
Yeah, they're basically shin armor that's made out of leather.
Exactly, yeah, I think that's what she's for. They found a belt made out of nipples.
How do you make a belt out of nipples?
You dry them and you sew them together. A window shade with a pair of lips attached to its pull string.
That's fucking nasty.
And to round it all off, a box full of vulvas.
Well, you wouldn't just throw those out.
The piece also implied that Gene might be involved in the disappearance of a local girl, stating, Gene reportedly has relatives at La Crosse, and authorities believe he was there about 5 days before Evelyn Hartley, 15-year-old babysitter, disappeared several years ago. The object of one of the most intensive searches in history, no trace of the Hartley girl was ever found. She was cutting into his babysitting money.
You gotta get rid of the competition.
Another article, Hogan Riddle May Be Answered, postulated that the December 8th, 1954 disappearance of local tavern owner Mary Hogan may have just been solved, positing that the 60-year-old female skull that I mentioned might be that of the 55-year-old Mary Hogan. The article claimed that, quote, Gene is reported to have a good recollection of events just before and after December 8th, 1954, but claims he cannot recall details of the day Mrs. Hogan disappeared. On November 30th, still more bones were found on the farm. These were exhumed from a garbage pit about a quarter of a mile from the house. And then, 3 years later, in May of 1960, even more bones were discovered. They were exhumed by these dogs. These guys were on the land planting some trees, and they saw these dogs digging, so they went over to see what was going on, and they found more bones.
Awesome.
Human bones.
Awesome.
Yep. And all this mess and junk and bones and stuff from his house were put in a crime lab and stored away until 1962, when the remains of Gene's victims were finally buried.
You know, it shouldn't take that long to get these folks buried.
No. Yeah. Once they had the trial and disposed.
I mean, once you decide that's what's going on, just it doesn't take a month.
Gene himself claimed that he only murdered two of his victims, Mary Hogan and Bernice Warden. He said that all the other remains were excavated from graves that he would pick by studying the local obituaries. Ain't that a bitch? You know, you have a loved family member pass away, you have the funeral, and you bury them, and then you got to worry about, are they still down in there?
Right, somebody fucking with them.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, Pete. That just shows you how people think in ways that I would never have thought to use the obituaries as a shopping list.
Before we continue, let's pause a minute for a word about Anchor Podcasting, and let's let all that gruesome detail soak in, too.
Yeah, good golly.
And we're back! So, Gene was found unfit to stand trial and was committed to the Central State Hospital in Waupun, Wisconsin, on January 6, 1958.
This was back when you could actually commit people and they couldn't do anything about it.
Right. The Gein farmhouse was destroyed by a mysterious fire a couple of months later, on March 20th, 1958. Arson was suspected, but never proved. According to Wikipedia, Gein's 1949 Ford sedan, which he used to haul the bodies of his victims, was sold at public auction for $760, which is equivalent to about $6,800 today.
You know, I think nowadays he could probably get $3 million for this kind of shit. Yeah, you know, because back then people were like, hell no, I don't want anything to do with that. Now they'd be like, yeah, it's cool.
The guy who bought it was Bunny Gibbons, and he was a carnival sideshow operator. This dude charged a quarter for an admission price to see the car. You know, viewing cars of notorious individuals must have been a thing back in the day, because I personally can remember going to the Miracle Lane Plaza in Dover, Ohio, to see Joseph Stalin's limousine and Bonnie and Clyde's car.
The one that was shot up?
Yeah. And you could actually still see the bloodstains on the upholstery.
So were they bringing the car into the plaza as a way to get people to the plaza to say, hey, look at this shit. And oh, by the way, you can shop while you're here?
Yeah, because I actually used that newspapers.com to look up when it happened. It was June of 1972, and they were having a sale in the plaza. And, you know, evidently whoever owned the cars at the time was, touring them around. And they said, well, bring them here, and, you know, people will come to see them, and then they'll shop at our stores.
Well, it is a good piece of advertising if you think about it. You know, I mean, if you got a new plaza, you got to let people know it exists and all that kind of thing. Kind of makes sense. You need to, you know, now they have the radio station shows up and says, hey, we're here at the new Kroger or whatever.
Yeah, I vividly remember seeing that car all shot up and seeing the stains on the seats. Yeah.
That's nasty, brother.
Yeah, yeah. Joseph Stalin's car was boring.
That really is morbid. That's really morbid.
Yeah, it's gross. And I think, you know, I think about it now and I'm like, oh man, we were sick mofos.
Yeah. But your mom took you, right?
I don't remember.
You were like 7.
It might have been my grandma. I don't know. I don't know. But it was an adult. It was an adult with a vehicle. So anyway, back to Ed Gein. In December of 1962, Wisconsin's governor-elect John Reynolds visited the hospital in which Gein was being treated/confined. And so he's touring around, you know, and going to, you know, probably the cafeteria and probably some of the group meetings and all this shit.
Sure. Photo event, right?
Yeah. And he got to the workshop, like wood shop or metal shop area. And he went up to this guy who was in there and asked him how he liked the place. And the guy looked at him and said, it's a pretty good place, but some of the people here are pretty disturbed. And guess who that guy turned out to be?
It's got to be Ed Gein.
It was Ed Gein.
Oh,
and the governor-elect had no idea who it was. After they left, the people were like, do you know who you just talked to? Yeah, so.
Awesome.
Yeah. Later in 1968, Gein was reassessed, and at this time he was given the seal of good mental health and did finally stand trial. He was found guilty of the murder of Bernice Worden.
Well, shouldn't he have been? Because he said, I kidnapped her.
Yeah.
And later he said, the only two people I killed were Bernice Worden and the chick that ran the bar.
Mary Hogan, yeah.
Mary Hogan. And you don't really have to work real hard to get this conviction, I don't think.
Well, since he was insane at the time of the murder, Gein was returned to Central State Hospital rather than being sentenced to prison.
Now, wait a minute. Okay, so we've said he's perfectly fine now. Let's put him on trial. But now we're going to send him back to the hospital instead of the prison?
That's exactly what they did.
That doesn't make any damn sense. That doesn't make any damn sense.
Gein died on July 26, 1984, of lung cancer in the Mendota Mental Health Institute in Madison, Wisconsin, after almost 26 years as a model patient. So why did he do what he did?
Because he's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. The Marshfield News Herald stated on November 22nd, 1957, that he drew great satisfaction from donning a vest made from a woman's torso, puttees of human skin, and a mask made of a face peeled from a skull. After his mother died, he said, "I want to become a woman."
Yeah, it puts the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
But he was doing it for real.
Yes, he was.
The Wisconsin State Journal had this reasoning. Bernice Worden was, Ed Gein said later, the second of two women who had reminded him of the paralyzed mother whose death 12 years ago left him alone on the decaying family homestead. So evidently he thought if he got a woman who looked like his mom and brought her home and killed her, mom would still be there. Kind of like Norman Bates.
Exactly like Norman Bates. And he's never really been socialized, right? She wouldn't let him leave the farm and stuff. So she was his whole world.
Yep. He was, unhealthily devoted to his mother. Some people think he murdered his brother to get rid of him so he didn't have to share her love. But like I said earlier, they never found proof or evidence that he murdered his brother.
Right.
The Capital Times out of Madison, Wisconsin, gave the following reason for Gein's behavior on November 16th, 1962. At a sanity hearing, psychiatrists testified that Gein felt ordained by God to kill and had robbed graves so he could substitute human parts for the companionship of human beings. One psychiatrist said Gein robbed graves for companionship and because he felt the women of Plainfield were not good enough for him.
He heard that from his mother 1,000 times, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably.
Right, because she wouldn't let him leave. And he was lonely as fuck and out of his damn mind.
Yeah.
Really, you need to let your kids go away from home, people.
Yeah. Gein's misadventures birthed a series of jokes that were dubbed as Geiners that were popular in Wisconsin at the time.
Well, you got to laugh or you're going to cry.
They're pretty lowbrow.
Well,
here are some examples. What did Ed Gein say when the hearse drove by? Dig you later, baby.
Oh, that's terrible.
What did Ed Gein give his girlfriend on Valentine's Day? A box of Farmer Fannies.
That's Fanny Farmers, right?
Right. So this is a play on that. Another one is, they say Ed Gein likes older women. He always has a couple hanging around the house.
Yeah.
And lastly, they say Ed Gein likes a girl with good skin, but he prefers it removed. Yuck, 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 yuck. All right.
That's just terrible. Especially if, you know, I mean, these were local people he was digging up because he was reading the obituaries.
Right. They had to be friends and families of somebody in town, you know, or the county.
Dude, horrible, horrible.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, no.
I guess people were just so freaked out, you know, by all this that they turned to comedy for relief in the case of these Geiners.
Yeah, they had to.
I didn't mention it earlier. They did, you know, dig up some of the graves that he said he had dug up, and the coffins were empty.
So he really did grave rob.
Matter of fact, one of them had his crowbar in it.
That's a bad deal.
He had dropped it, and so he was grave robbing. But I think there were at least a few instances more, you know, other than Mary Hogan and Bernice Worden. Just me thinking, I think he got.
And that 15-year-old girl?
That 15-year-old girl, I would suspect.
Was linked, yeah.
Was him, but again, it's just me.
And a box full of vulvas. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I keep my box in a box?
Yep. Gein has achieved immortality in print as well as on the silver screen. It seems pretty obvious that Robert Bloch modeled Psycho's Norman Bates on Ed Gein.
Yeah.
I mean, incidences of taxidermy in both. The domineering mother, Oedipal complex, murder.
Wanting to be a female.
And dressing up. Yeah, yep. Gein probably never saw this movie because...
Are you saying that he wouldn't play the movie Psycho in the mental hospital that he was staying at?
I don't think they did. I don't know if he ever read the novel or not, but it's highly doubtful that he ever himself saw the movie. And then in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you got the cannibalism and the human face mask, which are obviously references back to Gein.
Yeah.
And Buffalo Bill's skin suit in Silence of the Lambs is another dead giveaway, if you'll pardon the pun.
It clearly is.
So that's the tale of Ed Gein. Did you dig it? He was a real cut up.
Nah. Yes, he was a real cut up. But it just bothers me to think that, you know, somewhere in the United States, there's roughly 350 million Americans, right? You know, even if it occurs one in 30,000 times, that means there's 10,000 of these fuckers out there.
Yeah. 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 My brain keeps telling me if he did it, others have done it.
Absolutely. And if it is 10,000, I think that's about the number of counties in the U.S. So there ought to be one per county.
Yuck.
Although birds of a feather tend to flock together. So, you know, maybe. I don't know. I don't like thinking about it. Shit, man. I don't like thinking about it.
Yeah. This just, the story fascinates me for some reason, but it just creeps me out. You just have no idea what's going on in your neighbors' houses.
Or that guy at the gas station who plugged your tire.
Or the guy you hire to come
clean your gutters.
Mow the lawn or clean the gutters. Yeah. Or paint your house. You never fucking know. I guess we should be thankful that he mostly contented himself with already dead people and didn't require fresh specimens for his hobby. But I do think that the murders and the dismemberments of Mary Hogan and Bernice Worden indicated an escalation. If they hadn't caught him,
it would have continued. Absolutely, it would have.
More and more women would have been disappearing.
Absolutely true.
Well, that's enough of that gruesomeness. I had cannibals with Sonny Bean and the movies that came from him, and Ed Gein with his human skin suit and his probable cannibalism.
Well, there's a. It's not probable. There was a heart in the pot. On the stove.
Right. Maybe he didn't have anywhere to put it. They didn't say the pot was on and boiling.
It's just a storage vessel.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
But you know what? I'm going to do a fucking Bigfoot story next time to cleanse my palate.
Yes. To cleanse the old palate. That's a good idea. I have to say that I really like our series on doing what movies were based on real events, right? Horror movies in particular.
Oh, God. And there are more.
Oh, God. The list is, if you start digging, it's huge.
Even Freddy Krueger is based on an actual incident.
That's the one that's unbelievable.
It's a huge stretch.
Yeah.
To get to Freddy Krueger from the
well, they did the whole dream thing. And they did right. All, you know.
But yeah. Yeah.
Thank God that, well, as far as I know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon isn't based on a real event.
Right. What Do You Think About is co-written by John Gordos and Jim Dumermuth. Our theme music, In Suspense, is provided by podsummit.com. Thanks to all you listeners. Please take the time to rate our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Drop us a line at wdouta@gmail.com or visit our Facebook page, anchor.fm/wdouta, for updates on releases. Copyright 2022 by John Gordos and Jim DeRuth.
Ed Gein is a crazy motherfucker.
Yeah.
That's just, there's no other way to put it. Horrific. Yeah, well, he may have had a problem too, in that if he's digging up corpses and things like this, they're likely embalmed, right? They're not going to make good eating.
Yeah.
You need a fresh kill for that, right?
Yeah, surely. Surely he wasn't eating. Yeah, I mean, you get sick eating an embalmed person.